Welcome to One Board Podcast, where we explore the family side of gaming. I'm here today with the original New Year's baby, Rick White. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing very well, yes. Had a wonderful birthday. At least that's my celebrity birthday. Every celebrity has to have a fake birthday so that they can have a better celebration on their real birthdays. So January 1 is my celebrity birthday.
And what you can do is you can convince all your friends that the festivities are actually for you. All the way from China to the other side of the world, they're for you.
I mean, as the original New Year's baby, obviously that's what they are for. So it's all me.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
They used to put me in that crystal that's at New York at Times Square. I was inside the crystal for like the first 10 years of my life.
And then when it lands, you emerge like you're being birthed.
Yes, exactly.
From the crystal ball. Good stuff. We're learning so much about you, Rick.
Most certainly.
And your creepy, creepy birth.
Yes.
So, Rick, today we're talking about your first board game date. That seems so nice and so pleasant. Tell me what you mean by your first board game date.
Well, I think your first board game date would be your first experience with a new group of friends playing games together. There, it seems like a simple concept of, hey, why don't you come over and let's play some games? But if you're like us with well over 100 games in our collections, you want to make sure that that experience goes well for them, that they're engaged and entertained the whole time, but that you're also able to have fun and not be bored playing something. You want to give them something new and exciting that keeps them coming back to the table.
Well, I've got something. It's not a first board game date, but probably a mismatch that I have to add to the conversation. We visited St. Louis, visited some amazing friends, family friends in St. Louis, and had just the best time after Christmas this year. And we brought a bag full of games, of course, and we showed them a bunch of different games, and everything went so well. And each night, I think we played two different games every single night we were there. And just, man, it was so good. Everything was hitting on all cylinders. They were constantly like, man, we got to get this game. And I remember one of the kids asked a question about a game, and she said, don't worry, I've already started a wish list. We've been adding all these games. So it was going really well until I introduced them to New York Slice. And for some reason, it just didn't connect with them. One of the comments that was made around the table was that they didn't understand. They understood the concept of the game, but not necessarily how to win at the game. And so there was some disconnect with that game. And I felt so bad because that was the last game that we played. And when you have that mismatch of player and game, you can feel really terrible, especially when you're so passionate about gaming and maybe the other party may not be.
Yeah, definitely. I've had a few moments when I have tried to introduce a board game and really tried to sell people on something. My biggest, I guess, board game date failure would probably have been Formula D. I introduced it to my brother and my brother-in-law and his girlfriend, and I think we had one other person there, but we played it, and I don't know if it was just like looking at the board made it seem complicated, or if they just weren't feeling something like that, but they all seemed to like check out halfway through the game. My way of judging it is if somebody's on their phone while we're playing a game, I'm like, they're not having fun. And so like that happened a few times that I become really self-conscious about that. I'm like, no, this is fun. You guys, I promise it's getting there. What if I do something stupid? Would that entertain you and you guys will be back in the game? Can I drive my car into a cliff? You know?
Yeah, so. That's funny.
So, but I have had a lot more good board game dates. We had a fairly interesting situation where a lady that worked with my wife got to know us and said, you know what? I think my son and his wife would really enjoy hanging out with you guys. And we're like, yeah, maybe, you know, sometime that'll happen. But it seemed kind of weird to be like blind friend dating. But eventually, my wife met his wife for coffee and they hit it off, and it was determined that they like games, we like games. So we had them over and had a great time playing some games, and we still meet like once a month now. They're our most regular board game partners now, and we play games with them all the time. And it's been really cool to get to know people that way.
That's really cool. Something very similar happened to a friend of ours recently. They were asked to, you know, this person knew that they enjoyed board games, and so she connected them with her son, who is, I think, a similar age or just a year or two younger, and they went and played Carcassonne with this complete stranger and went through the rules with him and stuff like that. It's interesting because you can build some really amazing relationships through board games. You can build some really great relationships because you're not staring at a screen, you're not disconnected. Especially games that encourage interactions with one another are probably the best because you get to know a little about that person when you play.
So Ryan, when it comes to a first board game date, what do you think are some of the key elements to kind of push you towards success for that board game date?
I would say player interaction. Anytime you can get to know a person through those player interactions, get to know them a little better about their personality. Maybe even see what kind of gamer they are. You know, I think about the competitive side that Erin, my wife, has when we're playing a really competitive game or something that's putting people against each other. She gets very competitive, and that's cool because that is a side of her, you know, as a person, that you may not see in any other area of life, but you do at the game table. I would say the other one is, especially if you're just getting to know a person, something that allows some talking, maybe not something that is super deep thinking wise. I think of, you know, a game like, what do we play? Well, we played, Downforce with some friends of ours recently, and we were introducing them to the game, but the game is light enough where we were talking the whole time. Everybody's having a good time, talk about a little bit of strategy. And it's not a game where you go, bam, bam, bam. Everything's got to be happening quick. You know, you can take a minute in between turns. It's not going to ruin the game. So I'd say something that encourages conversation.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, the competitive part, I think, can go either way. I personally have tried to make sure our games aren't super competitive to where people don't get turned off by some sort of, you know, I can't believe that person did that to me. We just met them and they're already trying to keep me from winning and stuff like that. And for me too, like, I personally couldn't care less about whether or not I win a game, especially on a first time game night. Because I am somewhat competitive. I like to win. I'm going to play correctly. But honestly, I spend quite a bit of my brain power ensuring that people are enjoying themselves and that they're understanding the game. So I'm not 100% focused on what I'm doing because I really do value the experience for the other person. I think games that encourage you to talk are better for that. I think, you know, it's always good, I think, to start with a filler game because, you know, that way you're kind of warming up to each other and figuring out, you know, how do they best understand rules. You also kind of, if you do a shorter game, can kind of see, like you said, the kind of gamer they are. One thing I really try to pay attention to is those that suffer from the dreaded analysis paralysis. If a person really struggles with that, I may pick a game that has shorter turns or fewer mechanics involved in order to make sure that they're not at my house for 5 hours playing a game.
You bring up a really good point there. If you know they're prone to that, I think about a game that one of my coworkers, you know, you guys heard Bob earlier, two episodes ago, Bob, one of my coworkers, he introduced me to the game Honshu. I love city building games. Honshu is a great game from Renegade Games, but you can suffer from that analysis paralysis. You can sit there and overanalyze a card or overanalyze a turn. And I remember saying to Bob, I know the people that I will not play this game with. I bought Honshu this week and I played it with my son. That is one of the people I will not play this game with. You know, Josiah does a great job in so many games and he's so good at winning. He's competitive. He really thinks through his turns. But when it came to Honshu, he sat there and looked at his card and overanalyzed it. And so luckily the second time we played was a ton better. But it was one of those moments where had that been somebody that I didn't know or didn't know well, and they just sat there staring at their cards for 5 minutes, it would have made for a terrible night.
Being aware, what I've had to learn is like the game night is not about me. It's not about me wanting to play a game just because I just got it. If it's not going to work with that group, then it's not going to work. So saving the new game until a later group and maybe breaking out something that is more guaranteed to have a good time. So I think, Ryan, that we've given some pretty good advice on first-time game nights, if I do say so myself.
Something you just said reminded me. Know the game that you're bringing to teach a person, because I think that's one of the other issues. If you bring a brand new game, I think about the fact that sometimes I'll try to learn a brand new game in front of somebody or with somebody that I'm just meeting or getting to know. That can be terrible because they have questions and you don't have any answers. So if you're sitting down and playing a game with somebody new, or it's your first time interacting like that, definitely know the game that you're playing so that you can answer the questions.
Well, Ryan, I think that kind of wraps up our discussion there. So up next, we're going to be talking about yet another awesome board game developer.
All right, we are back, and this week we're talking about the publisher Green Couch Games. Jason Katorski is actually founder of Green Couch Games, and they have put out some amazing games in the years that they've been around. They've only been around since 2014. Can you imagine that, Rick?
That's insane. Like, it feels like they have been a big part of my entire board game journey, and it's only been that long.
And so it's interesting because they're going to be sending out their 10th game to print in 2018. So that's really cool. I mean, to have 10 games under your belt as a publishing house in 4 years, and the games that they have are, while they might be small games as far as size, the games are not small when it comes to the mechanics and the fun that you're going to have. So Rick, some of the games that you know Green Couch Games for, what are they?
Green Couch Games, actually, I guess, is meaningful to me and my one board family journey because the first game I ever reviewed for our website was a Green Couch game, and that was Walk on Fire.
That's right.
And that was actually the first game also that I ever supported on Kickstarter. And Walk on Fire is, in my experience with Green Couch Games, it's actually, to me, not their best game, but it's still really good. It's a game that involves a different mechanic with cards. You take all a big bunch of ingredients cards and you make a big stack or pile, I guess, of them on the table. And then you use these spatula cards to flip them over. And you take turns taking ingredients from the pile that are face up when you have flipped them, and then you get points based on which cards you've managed to collect by the end of the game. So it's able to take something like cards and do something dexterity-based that you don't really see that with cards. I think it's a pretty cool little mechanic for that game.
And a game that we both know well, Best Treehouse Ever, that you also reviewed that for One Board Family. Best Treehouse Ever is all about building the greatest, most grand treehouse. Green Couch Games actually came out with an expansion to Best Treehouse Ever, and that's going to be publishing. The Kickstarter was toward the end of 2017. It'll be publishing in 2018. That's super exciting to see because that is a great game. I love that when you're building that treehouse, the little illustrations on the cards are just super cool. It's definitely one of the games that I actually saw a game on our friend's game shelf the other day. I was like, do you like that game? And she was like, yeah, we really do, but the kids have kind of outgrown it. And I was like, you guys need to get Best Treehouse Ever. So I was able to suggest a Green Couch game to some friends of ours just this past week.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think Best Treehouse Ever would probably be one of my top five illustrated games as far as that. The thing that to me is wonderful about Green Couch Games, and when Aaron was on the podcast a while back. You know, I just realized this is the first time it's just me and you in four episodes, Ryan. I mean, we've been having all kinds of guests come hang out with us.
It seems more intimate. I had lit a candle on this side. Did you do one on your side also?
I did, but then it caught my entire outfit on fire, so I had to stop.
You can't wear evening gowns while
it was my New Year's baby diaper, and it burst into flames. And so, but
the imagery, no.
But like with, I was saying about Harbor, about how there's so much fun in a tiny little package. That's what I think happens with Green Couch. These boxes are all very small. But there's a lot of fun inside these tiny little boxes. And I think that's great for, you know, I'm one of those people, I'm running out of room and I can get just as much fun out of Best Treehouse Ever as I can with some of these giant monster boxes that I'm toting on these game shelves. And I think Green Couch Games does a great job of I still think it's bang for your buck, but bang for your like square inches or cubic inches.
Yeah. Well, I think about the fact that Ladder 29 was probably one of the surprises from last year for me. Ladder 29 was published in 2017 through a Kickstarter, and they just did such a great job of taking a classic game, something that felt like Rummy, and modernizing it a little and making it a little difficult and kind of giving it some variability with these hotspot cards. And so that's a game to me that it's an easy sell to take that and throw it into a bag. That's a game that comes with me to lunch when I take a break and go downstairs and meet up with coworkers. That's an easy sell, whereas I'm not bringing Dead of Winter anywhere with me. You know, right. I'm not going to tote that around.
Right, and I think there's something to be said about that particular approach to gaming, you know. A big thing for me this year is going to be playing games with as many different people as I can. And the portability of a game is going to be super helpful for that.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about games like those produced by Green Couch, which are going to allow me to play games where I might not normally be able to break something out. Like we're sitting at Starbucks and waiting around. Oh, now we're playing Ladder 29 or something like that.
Yeah,
so I'm glad there are publishers out there that don't go for the big shelf space. There's games that could fit in a box the size of Best Treehouse Ever that take up a shelf size, like Time's Up Title Recall that we had once. It was a timer and a stack of cards, and the box was huge. And I'm like, why is this happening? And I understand retail space and things like that, but I definitely appreciate people like Green Couch Games and people like Tim Fowers, who was with us last week, who... It seems to me that you're showing the gamers out there that you care about our collections when you do things like this.
That's true. And did you know that Green Couch Games got its name from a couch that Jason and his wife had in their basement? They had bought this couch, this green couch, for $20 at a friend's grandmother's yard sale. And it's pretty cool because the symbolism of this, him and his wife used to sit and dream and listen to music and create songs on this couch. And so it's this idea of creativity and bringing it all back. And so it's really cool. Great games from a great company. And if you get a chance, get to know Jason Katorski. He actually runs a podcast called the 20 Minutes of Filler podcast, which you should definitely check out. And that'll just about do it for this publisher. If you don't already have a Green Couch game on your game shelf, fix that quickly.
All right, and we're back. Gosh, I still love that intro music. It gets me going every time. Ryan, this week we're going to be talking about a game that I have wanted to play for so long and still haven't gotten to. And so I'm going to be hanging on your every word this week as you talk to us about Tiny Epic Quest. Now, Tiny Epic Quest is in a series of games that begin with the word tiny. And there's been several of them. Ryan, why don't you tell us a little bit about Tiny Epic Quest and what makes it different from those other Tiny games?
Yeah, so Tiny Epic Quest was actually my first Tiny Epic game. GameLand Games has created this Tiny Epic series. You've got Tiny Epic Western, Tiny Epic, I think, Galaxies. There's a bunch of different ones that they've put out over the years, but this was actually my first one. I was so intrigued with the Kickstarter when it came out. I think it was 2016, maybe, when... Yeah, 2016 when the Kickstarter launched, and I was like, I've got to get this game. They have these things called item meeples, which sounds a little clunky, but they're meeples. They're plastic meeples that actually have holes in their arm, where their arms are, and they can hold weapons and different pieces and things like that. It has such a cool feel, and it's colorful and vibrant. The game, honestly, from the game box all the way down to the components, it makes you feel like you're playing a Zelda game on your tabletop. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, I think those item meeples are so super cool. You know, I think about video games that I used to play where you would get an upgrade on your weapon, and yet it would look the exact same way when you were playing through the game. I think it's super cool that, hey, I have a sword, and I really have a sword. I think that is super cool little piece to this game.
That's right.
So, Ryan, besides making fancy-looking little meeples, what are you doing in Tiny Epic Quest?
So each player plays up to four players, and actually has a pretty decent solo component to it, which is nice. So you could solo play Tiny Epic Quest. You get the opportunity to control three meeples, three of these item meeples, and you're going out and adventuring into this big land. Basically, your car, even though it's in a tiny box, these cards spread out to make a map that fills a pretty good table. It fits on our table. We have just a little bit of room on the sides to put our components and things like that. So the game, while it may have a big table presence, it's in such a small portable box, and that's kind of something that the Tiny Epic series is known for. So you're taking your three adventurers and you're going out, you're defeating goblins for points. There's basically, I think there's three or four ways to make victory points. So you can complete quests, you can upgrade your spells, you can learn new spells, you can defeat goblins, and you can get treasure and upgrade legendary weapons, basically, to get these different victory points. So there's a lot of ways that you can win. Some are a little more profitable than others. Aaron and I have played this game multiple times as a two-player game, and it works so well. Just two people sitting there, sending their meeples out, exploring the hillside, defeating monsters, exploring caves. It's a really fun game.
That's awesome. So, Ryan, if you're talking about Tiny Epic Quest and somebody's wondering, it sounds fun, it sounds like something I'm interested in, what are some games that you can think of that maybe this compares to that could give a person an idea of, well, I liked that game, I'm probably going to like Tiny Epic Quest as well?
I don't know that I have one right offhand that I can mention, but I do. I guess I can talk a little about the mechanics. So when you're moving, you have like five different ways to move around the map. You can move by horse, by foot, by raft, by ship, and by griffin, I believe. And so you have these different ways of moving around the map, and what happens is at the beginning of a day cycle, each person picks a way to move around the map. So let's say Aaron chooses a way to move around the map. She says, I want to move by horse. Well, it has a certain way of movement. It's I believe the horse is a straight line horizontally, I believe. So you can move your meeples on a straight line horizontally across the map. So once she chooses that, then it comes to me, and I can choose to use my meeples by horse or not, and it goes through the cycle, and then I get the second choice. So maybe I want to move by foot, so I can move to any adjacent area of the map. So it's pretty cool. You get to choose and pick what way you want your meeples to go, where you want them to stand. And it's pretty cool because there's some areas of the map where only one person can be on that. So if you put your item meeple there first, the other person's not going to be able to get there. And you really want to kind of hone in on specific areas. I went with defeating goblins. So every time that I got an opportunity, I'd find a way to get to a goblin and defeat that goblin on, it has a day and night phase. So the day phase you move, the night phase you explore, defeat a goblin, whatever. And they've got these really, really good dice. The dice are amazing. Very, very nicely made dice. And everybody gets a chance to roll, and everybody has to take the effects of those rolls, which is a very unique mechanic. That's something that I haven't seen before. And as so if Aaron rolls damage on the dice, I would also take damage if there was enough damage on the dice, which is interesting.
If I'm wanting to get my hands on a copy and have my own little tiny epic quest, how am I going to get that, Ryan?
Well, you can check out, we're going to provide a link to, of course, an Amazon listing in our review. We're going to post a review on oneboardfamily.com. It'll kind of go in depth with some of the components, because honestly, while Tiny Epic Quest is a great game, I'm a dude with chunky fingers, and I do not like some of the smaller components in the game, and it's very frustrating. So it's not a perfect game by any means, but in our review, we kind of pick out some of those areas that you may want to watch out for. Obviously, if you have a baby, you probably don't want to have a tiny epic quest, because one of those tiny epic swords might get lodged in its tiny throat. So just giving a warning to the parents out there. So you can find it on Amazon. You can check out Miniature Market. You can go to Cool Stuff Inc. You can find it just about anywhere that you find games. Of course, go to your local, friendly local game shop and check them out. See if they have a copy. If not, they could probably order it for you. The game's pretty inexpensive. I think it retails for like $29, I believe. So obviously don't quote me on that, since I'm not looking at a listing right now. Mm-hmm. That's how prepared I come into these podcasts.
Almost certainly. You know? I'm imagining right now you getting Kindle as like your squire. And it's like, squire, please put my sword into my meeple, please, because my fingers cannot put it there.
That's and I exactly also how that
you
happens.
Always use an accent when you play Tiny Epic Quest.
That's exactly how it happens. In fact, if you don't have an accent, you get thrown out immediately.
Yeah.
It's one of the game rules. So. Totally.
Well, Ryan, I think that wraps us up for this edition of the One Board Podcast. And this was episode 8, so just 2 more left in this season, Ryan.
Yeah, 2 more episodes. We're going to be talking about dexterity games next week, and then we're going to be listing some of our favorite games of all time in episode 10. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that. And we are structuring right now. We've got a document we're working on structuring what season 2 looks like. I don't think we're going to take that long of a break, because I think we're having a lot of fun with this medium. So it's definitely something we won't be out of your ears for 2 long. While you're at it, while you're on the podcast, while you're listening to the show, why don't you give us a rating on iTunes? We would be greatly appreciative of that. The more people you tell about this, and the higher the rating it gets in iTunes, man, the more people can find out about how their family can get into gaming. So we would greatly appreciate your support, and be sure to check out oneboardfamily.com for all your family gaming needs.
Definitely. And don't forget to see us on Facebook, on YouTube, on Instagram. We're all over the place. You know, you can't escape us. So we're trying to tell you all we can about games. Try to check us out on all those different platforms. But until next time, have fun gaming.
Welcome to One Board Podcast, where we explore the family side of gaming and how to get your little peoples around those meeples at your dinner table. How are you doing today, Rick? I'm going to start that one over. It sounds real creepy, not going to lie.
Yeah, it does sound a little...
I sound like a big old creeper.
Well, just a little bit, but you know, you did rhyme, so that's helpful.
Well, that's the thing. Only creepers rhyme.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's why most rap artists are creepers.
Oh, man, that's a lot of judgment happening very early in the episode.
It is very early. Let's start this mug over.